Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Nahastan anila nijone go shavothya, nijone go shavothya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwai, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwai, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Ah! music from the drum White Lodge off their Abra Records CD. The name of that song was Windy Butte. Buttes are steep hills that rise abruptly up from the surrounding landscape. Buttes are prayer places to native peoples who do ceremonies up in the Butte. Unfortunately, many buttes, like other sacred lands, are being desecrated by nearby energy development. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast is Program 5 of Wolf Mountain Radio's series on climate change and energy justice. This program shares conversation with participants from the 2009 Florida Statewide PowerShift Conference. My first guest you will hear is Ms. Jessie Moore Thomas. Jessie is a young African-American woman who, like me, is also a professional ecologist and activist. We both believe in using our knowledge of science for the well-being of all life on Mother Earth. PowerShift is a national campaign of more than 300,000 young people across the country who are calling for bold, serious action on climate change and energy justice issues. Yad Kiddushi Native Center endorses this campaign. Global climate change and energy issues have long been major concerns of Yad Kiddushi Native Center. An important priority of mine has been encouraging and mentoring young people to think globally and act locally on many serious planetary justice issues. This is why Yad Kiddushi Native Center networks with many organizations, campaigns, and protests, such as PowerShift. I felt honored to be invited to speak at Florida PowerShift 09. It was a privilege to meet many fine youth activists concerned about global climate change and energy and environmental justice. Yad Kiddushi Native Center, like many indigenous peoples throughout the world, have long been speaking out about the many serious problems impacting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life. Humanity is living during a critical time in our planet's history. This is why our Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices programs focus on many important global issues that need serious attention. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, indigenous peoples have tried for many years to warn the international community about many serious ecological issues, especially global climate change and abusive energy development. Exploitation of energy resources have greatly impacted native peoples throughout the globe. The history of colonization and now globalization has been fueled from the greed of energy development. Indigenous peoples have made numerous declarations about climate change at various international forums, such as at the United Nations and to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. A native woman, Sheila Watt Cloutier, former chairperson of the Inuit Circumpolar Council, an international organization of indigenous peoples of the Arctic, shared the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize with former U.S. Vice President Al Gore for their work on global climate issues. In 1998, as a journalist, I attended a national climate conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, hosted by NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. This NASA summit was special and historic in that many Native peoples were invited to present testimony. The Albuquerque Declaration and Native Peoples, Native Homelands Climate Change Report, entitled Circle of Wisdom, is still a very important reference. There have been many other international declarations by indigenous peoples about climate change, such as karaoke at the UN Conference on Environment and Development in Quito, Ecuador, in Lyon, France, in Hague, Netherlands, in Milan, Italy, in Kyoto, Japan, in Bonn, Germany, in Nakuru, Kenya, Africa, at the Indigenous Nationalities of the Amazon, and the April 2009 Indigenous Peoples Global Summit on Climate Change in Anchorage, Alaska, are important examples. Unfortunately, the wisdoms and knowledge of Indigenous peoples about climate change is a voice that is still not respected enough by governments, industry, and the world citizenry that seems to ignore anthropogenic global climate impacts. PowerShift is a project of the Energy Action Coalition. EAC was founded in June 2004 to unite a diversity of organizations in an alliance that supports and strengthens the student and youth clean, just, and renewable energy movement. PowerShift is known for mobilizing thousands of students and youth to rally in Washington, D.C., to pressure the White House and Congress for a strong and comprehensive climate and energy plan. PowerShift's goal is for U.S. energy policy that creates a renewable energy economy with millions of new green jobs, ends dependence on dirty, polluting energy, brings American security, protects the environment, and reduces harmful global climate change pollution. The work of the Energy Action Coalition is so timely in view of the upcoming Global Climate Conference in Copenhagen, Denmark. Unfortunately, many nations after important international conferences do not fulfill their pledges or honor agreements made. In view of this, people must continue their climate and energy justice activism beyond Copenhagen. Yad Kiddushin Native Center urges our listeners to become active in climate, energy, and environmental issues. Consider joining PowerShift. Sign their petition against dirty tricks by the fossil fuel and nuclear energy companies and their lobbyists. Urge President Obama and members of Congress to create safe, clean, renewable energy and climate policy. Participate in regional conferences, statewide symposiums, and local events in support of energy, environment, and climate justice actions. There are many fine organizations like EAC that will welcome your involvement. Remember, think globally and act locally. In 2006, I participated in a Florida statewide meeting of college students guided by EAC's Campus Climate Challenge to encourage universities to invest in renewable energy. Florida Gulf Coast University, where I am a lecturer and curriculum advisor, has signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. FGCU is also constructing a 2-megawatt solar energy project on campus, which will reduce FGCU's use of polluting fossil fuel energy. I generally support this alternative energy project. However, the 16-acre solar field has generated much controversy that you heard about in Program 1 of this Climate Change and Energy Justice series. Institutions of higher education must show leadership on energy and climate issues. Greening of college campuses by reducing, reusing, and recycling should become a priority. It should be standard practice for colleges to conserve more energy and utilize safe, clean, and renewable energy technologies. Reducing a school's ecological footprint will save money. It also will be an example to society of how communities can create a healthier and sustainable future. An example of this is USGBC LEED certified energy and environment design buildings. A good example is Florida Gulf Coast University's Demonstration and Learning Center's Green Building project that is nearing construction. Green Building incorporates a number of important key concepts in design, construction, and maintenance. These include energy efficiency, passive design, recycled and renewable building materials, water usage, waste management, healthy indoor environment, and landscaping that protects and restores the site by planting native vegetation, which can be habitat for wildlife. The green building will showcase sustainable building standards and practices. Importantly, it will serve as a training center for engineering students in the construction industry. Universities as centers of education and research must also promote energy and environmental sustainability by their academic mission. Curriculums must include critical energy and climate issues. Courses must be interdisciplinary so that students learn about the serious global problems we are now faced with. Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education, where I serve as a member of the center's Board of Advisors, pedagogy is focused on ecological literacy and planetary citizenship for a sustainable and peaceful future through scholarship, education, and action. FGCU's 9 student goals and outcomes and promotion of the International Earth Charter exemplify the type of education needed for the 21st century. As I welcome Jesse Moore Thomas to Wolf Mountain Radio, I wish to read a statement from the Earth Charter, which I think exemplifies a philosophy those of us in power shift believe in. Quote, "In the midst of a magnificent diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family and one Earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace," unquote. Jesse, welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Hi, my name is Jesse Moore Thomas. I am here at Florida PowerShift here at University of Central Florida. I'm here because I very much care about the environment and clean, renewable energy. To renew the energy and the environment is to renew ourselves and our relationship with the environment, and I'm proud to be here.
Jesse, one of the issues that greatly concerns many of us, which I try to highlight whenever possible, is how industry and government agencies deceive the public by their public relations campaigns or by misholding key information. This is known as greenwashing. Greenwashing is a type of public image making. Corporations and government agencies deliberately paint a false picture about themselves. Many of these PR deceptions are designed to cover up their real business activities and environmental impacts. Several examples. Yucca Mountain, located in Nui Sogabia, the sacred homeland of the Western Shoshone Indian Nation since 1978, has been planned as the storage site for America's nuclear waste. Several years ago, the top U.S. government geologist testified before Congress that he and other scientists, under political pressure from the U.S. Department of Energy, not only falsified research, but made up data and lied about the safety and suitability of Yucca Mountain as being the nation's repository for high-level nuclear waste. Those of us longtime environmental justice activists can describe numerous cases of government agencies, like the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, withholding important information to the public, such as in their so-called cleanup of toxic Superfund sites. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission is also guilty of not releasing public information about utility company compliance of NRC regulations. The energy industry is an expert in greenwashing. Mining companies portray themselves as environmental stewards. Electric utilities spend millions of dollars on advertisements trying to convince the public that they are good corporate neighbors. Florida Power and Light is a good example of corporate greenwashing. Yad Kiddushin Native Center and other groups have for many years been fighting Florida Power and Light's efforts to expand their use of coal, natural gas, and nuclear power. One current issue we're fighting is FP&L's request to the State Public Service Commission to allow rate increases. Florida Power and Light wants their customers to pay for the cost of building future generating stations, even though they have not been approved to construct any new power plants. Florida Power and Light is, as they boast on their website, one of the largest and fastest growing companies in America. With assets in more than 20 states, Florida Power and Light is politically and economically very powerful in many state capitals and in Washington, D.C. To placate the public, FP&L co-sponsors various events such as community sports and county fairs to present an image of being a good neighbor. FP&L's public relations campaigns furthers this deception with expensive media advertisements that depict Florida Power and Light as being an environmentally responsible company. Independent scientific research documents FP&L's long history of detrimental impacts to human health and the environment. One good example of FP&L's PR campaign was when several years ago, Florida Power and Light proposed to build what would have been America's two largest coal power plants. The Glades Power Park Project's twin 980 megawatt units, a coal railroad, and miles of transmission lines would have caused great harm to the people and ecology of the Everglades region. Florida Power and Light first proposed to build this monster facility in a coastal community. Those people's wealth and political influence was able to stop the project. FP&L then put on a big public relations campaign to try and build a huge generating station in Inland Glades County, Florida. One of the poorest counties in the state, the polluting coal plants were near the biologically fragile Lake Okeechobee. The facility was only a few miles from a Seminole Indian reservation. Florida Power and Light used every deceptive trick in the book during their circus-like act to get approval by the state. Fortunately, after a lot of public pressure, which Yad Kiddushin Native Center was proud to be a part of, the FP&L Glades Power Park project was denied. FP&L spokespeople are not so forthright about their numerous violations of the U.S. Department of Energy's health, safety, and environmental regulations. Nor have Florida Power and Light given up on their efforts to develop more power generation, as evident in the current fight over their nuclear power expansion. Jesse, what are your thoughts about this topic of greenwashing?
That's very interesting that you mentioned that, because Florida Power and Light, of course, is not the only one in the state of Florida. There was a conference, a sustainability conference by Progress Energy. And you know Progress Energy is one of the backing of the nuclear energy at Ground Zero in Levi County. So we decided, you know, we wanted to do something on a No Nukes campaign, and we decided to greenwash a nuclear reactor. How can you be progressive in renewable energy when you're not even saying that nuclear energy is not renewable and it's not clean? Anybody who thinks that it is, they need like a re-examination of it. And I'm proud to talk to anyone about it. People who don't believe in global warming or whatnot, I'm proud to talk about that. I think that the corporate people are it's just all about money. It's greed, and you know, they think that's their nature, but it's not coherent with the Mother Nature that's blessing us, providing us with Earth. they need a huge reality check. Some activists who have been swindled in, and you know, it's happened to me sometimes. But I've realized I need to re-examine it and really see and think with my heart and my mind what's going on to replenish myself and be a better activist. To be active is to be progressive and also be active in, you know, change.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't no earthquake, but it stuck around. Made me think about power, like it or not. Gotta work for earth for what it's worth, cause it's the only earth we got. Shut 'em down. That's the only way to keep them down. Shut 'em down. That's the only way to keep. And a human error, 2,000 gauges, just a wing and a prayer. If you need perfection, and that's what it takes, then you can't use people, don't need people, no, no, people make mistakes. Shut them down, that's the only way to keep them down. Only way to stop them. But it's just around. Or maybe think about power, like it or not. Gotta work for earth for what it's worth, cause it's the only earth we got. Shut 'em down. That's the only way to keep them down. Shut 'em down. That's the only way to keep them down.
Down. That's the only way to keep them down.
Music from the band Atomic Cafe. The name of that song was Shut 'Em Down, referring to the need to shut down nuclear power plants in order to stop putting the public and environment at risk from nuclear radiation. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kadishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest on the program is climate change and energy justice youth activist, Jesse Moore Thomas. We spoke together at the 2009 statewide Florida PowerShift Conference. Jesse, one of the reasons why I wanted to interview you is because in addition to being an activist, you, like myself, are also a university-trained ecologist. It is good for young people to be involved in social, economic, energy, and environmental issues. However, it is also very important that activism be based on technical knowledge. Fighting business, industry, and government agencies requires having the same technical education as our opponents. We also need to have the same professional accreditations as those career people we debate. This is why I am a member of both the Society of American Foresters and American Society of Professional Ecologists. Those activists who do not have the professional background will not have a lot of trust by the public or our community. This is why Yad Kadishi Native Center mentors many young students because of the great need to have people of color scientists fight for justice. You and I, as forest biologists, have scientific understanding of climate change from studying forest ecology. Would you please share some insights about this?
I actually got into forest ecology in my sophomore year. I really didn't really think that much about the forest until I actually took a trip up to a place in Massachusetts where I did an internship, and I learned that the soil and the canopy, they all communicate, and they let us know how the environment is doing. The fungus, when it's there decomposing, it lets us know how the soil quality is or how much its enrichment is and how much it's cultivating. And so I jumped onto this thing called a long-term ecological research project where I used this laser technology called LIDAR. It's a light detection ranging apparatus, and I came on to do analysis of what my research professor had already done in 2005. So 2007, I learned how the canopies of a control and experimental forest differed from a disturbance, and that disturbance was a hurricane. However, the hurricane wasn't a natural one. It was one that was actually done by us. We simulated. They mimicked a hurricane in 1938 called the Long Island Express, and it's been going on since 1990, and I'm proud to be a part of it because it's taught me so much how important forests are, not to mention they're carbon sinks also, and they store a lot of carbon. The largest carbon sink in the world is in Antarctica, but you also gotta remember the forest also. The end of the forest is the end of us all, and that's quoting Dorothy Stang, who was famous rainforest activist. She was killed in 2005. With my background in biology, I think it's really important to become accredited as a professional. I think it's really important because it gives you more of a background on what's going on. If you say you're a specialist, like let's say you don't even have your degree and you say you're a specialist on climate change and you haven't really done any research in it, people aren't going to see that degree that you had, and they're going to just be like, It's not just public image, though. It's just credibility. Some people get their information from popular magazines, while, let's say, like an environmentalist didn't have their degree. Well, I was saying they get it from their popular magazines. Someone who has a degree, like in biology or any scientific-related field, they're going to read scientific papers of scientists who mostly claim, well, most of them, all if not all, claim that climate change is happening. They don't denounce it at all. It's important to have your degree. That's all I can really say.
Jesse, as a continuation of your last response to my question regarding the importance of activists having a college education and professional accreditation in order to challenge business, industry, and government over important issues like climate change and energy development, I think it is equally important for those of us with academic backgrounds and technical experience to also work as community organizers. This has been the focus of my many years working with poor and people of color communities fighting for environmental justice. Grassroots communities need people who not only understand cultural sensitivities, but who also have university education and professional experience. There is still a great shortage of people of color with academic degrees in business, economics, law, planning, and various sciences, which are so important to poor and so-called minority communities. Helping to train community members in research methodology, understanding technical reports, agency decision-making procedures, response strategies, campaign messaging, and media skills are some of the vital areas where educated activists, especially those who are scientists, can really help poor communities as community organizers. What is your response to this?
I think community organizing, in a sense, scientists need to be community organizing because we have a responsibility as scientists for progression. Doing activism or being an advocate is so much more than just being in your lab and just staying this narrow type of life in your own bubble. If you burst that bubble and actually provide a bubble of happiness or progress to other people, it's very pertinent for us as humanity progressing. I think that a lot of scientists are closeted scientists, you know, just staying in. Well, I'm a nerd and I'm an activist, so I had to get out of my bubble too. And from personal experience, it took little steps to get out of there. And I started off as a campus coordinator for UCF with PowerShift 2007, where I try to recruit individuals and say, climate change is happening right now and we're going to the national convention to get our voices to be heard. A lot of them just didn't really respond sometimes, but like I learned that I wasn't doing it a better way, but I grew from that as an activist, and I'm much more stronger sitting here talking to you today than I was, say, 2 years ago. And I'm much more happier, and I'm very optimistic, despite everything they're saying about the negativity. Yeah.
I know, and it's so hard just to put one foot in front of the other and keep breathing. Lord knows we've been through some trying times lately, and after enduring so many setbacks, we can begin to wonder if our lives, our work, mean anything. But still, I keep believing, because we can never know exactly where we stand in history. Think of the thousands of people who spent 10 or 20 years of their lives trying to get Nelson Mandela released from prison. Some of them died, perhaps brokenhearted, without learning the happy ending to that story. And so I say, hold on to hope with both hands. I'm going to share with you words from Dr. King that have given me the strength to carry on many times. And I hope that these words, inspired by sacred song and Unitarian philosophy, lift you up and give you the courage to keep on. How long will it take? I hear you ask today, oh, how long? I hear you ask today, how long will it take? How long?
Not long.
How long?
Not long.
Not long, because no life can live forever. How long will it take? I hear you ask today. soul. Universe is long. Yes, the arc of the moral universe is long. Arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice.
How long?
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yatkidichi Native Center, write to Yatkidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yatkidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
The music you heard prior to our Yatkidichi Native Center program station identification was from singer-songwriter Ann Feeney off her 2008 CD entitled Dump the Bosses Off Your Back. The name of that song was How Long. Ann Feeney is one of my favorite folk singers. Her songs for social, economic, labor, and environmental justice are very special. Wolf Mountain Radio urges listeners to visit Ann's website to see her touring schedule and list of CDs available for purchase. Ann Feeney's website is www.annfeeney.com. I want to again thank today's program guest, Miss Jessie Moore Thomas, for sharing her insights with us on Wolf Mountain Radio. Please listen next week for Program 6 of our Wolf Mountain Radio special series on climate change and energy justice, perspectives from the 2009 Florida Power Shift Conference. Yatkidichi Native Center urges worldwide listeners to get involved in defending Mother Earth and be active in the various campaigns and projects for justice. There are many fine organizations that will welcome your participation, such as Power Shift. Remember, it is better to be active today than radioactive tomorrow. Also, think globally and act locally. Yatkidichi Native Center wishes to again thank all of our worldwide listeners for their words of appreciation and financial support to keep Wolf Mountain Radio on the air. As you heard in our program identification, Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, radio programs are an all-volunteer production. Wolf Mountain Radio programs' purpose are educational. They are offered free of charge to everyone around the globe. We hope sharing Indigenous ethics and perspectives through our broadcasts will be for the well-being of Mother Earth and all life, now and for future generations. We shall conclude today's program with a selection from Nuwata flutist Mr. Keith Bear off his Makoshe Music CD entitled Earth Lodge. Keith's words provide a perspective of Native people's view of life and our relations to Mother Earth. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Tashkash. In the Mandan words, I greet you, Tashkash. It's a greeting that we've used to many different people as they traveled across this land. We call ourselves the Nuwata, the people. The Nuwata lived here. The Nuwata people, the people of the land. We lived here for thousands of years, and when we did live here, we lived in the earth. Our stories say that we came from the earth. We climbed up the root of the grape. We climbed up that root, and many of us came up to this land until one who was too big was child. She was told to wait, but she wanted to bring her child into a new world, and that branch broke, and so many are still under the ground waiting to come up. And when we came up here, we didn't want to take the life of our brothers to build a lodge. We had always been protected by the earth, so when we made our lodges, we dug the dirt down. Our center poles were like the four directions. They were powerful. When we needed help, we turned to those four powerful directions. Those trees were cottonwood trees because they grow here along the Missouri River. They're very tall and they're very beautiful, and they give us homes and they give us shields and they give us weapons and they give us toys for our children and they give us medicine, they give us comfort, and they give us many things. They sing to us. Even in the middle of winter, we can walk and hear their beautiful leaves crunching under our feet, and we wish for the springtime to come when the leaves dance against each other in the sky, the sixth direction. The sky is so beautiful. It's blue. It's full of water. And when that water touches the earth, it makes all good things grow. So we live there in the earth, and we are like the roots of that grass, and we are like the roots of that tree. We depend upon that water to feed our children, to nourish us, and to wash us, and to cleanse us, and to take all those bad things away from us, because we are a part of the earth. Nuwata people, we always lived in our lodges here along the river. Down below the trees, and below that coyote land, when the wind blows so cold in the wintertime, freeze your skin to put it out there. But we come here inside the lodge. We laid here and listened to the fire crack. We laid here and could smell the soup cooking. As we laid here in these lodges, we looked up and we saw the branches. And we dreamed about the day coming very soon when we would once again walk along those riverbanks among those giant cottonwood trees. In that hot, thick willows, the willows that give life to our people. And so from that earth came the Mandan, the Hiraata, the Nuwata, and the people of the willows. And so that's where we have lived for 1,000 years. And we hope that we will remember those places for 1,000 years, because in those lodges lives our hearts. And in our hearts lives the memories of those who have gone before us. And in our hearts, we know that once again, when they take us outside, when our spirit leaves this world, we will return to the most beautiful home of all, our Mother Earth. So I'm very proud that I can say, I am one of those people. Those that lived in the Earth lodges, and those are the ways of our people. And if you come here to look upon this land, not all those hills are empty. Take a look. You might be able to walk inside. Listen. You might be able to hear the heartbeat.